And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Well, Dave, another pace-setting week for the president who doesn't want to act. As a result of his inactivity, we have another 2+ million jobs lost this week. We're up to, what, 38 million now lost in the last 2 months. We're almost at 100,000 deaths, most of them preventable had he taken action. He hadn't taken action. And all of the social consequences that flow from having to lock down the country because you don't want to do your job or you can't do your job. And it continues, except that now he's saying, not so many people died. I don't want to count them the way everybody has always counted them. And we have to open up the country, no matter what, even if people die, because, listen, you take losses. We didn't have to take any of these losses except for him. Right?
Yeah. This is a Memorial Day weekend where we are mourning not just those lost in America's wars, but now all of those people that have lost in this epidemic and all these job losses and all the losses of opportunities for young people who are graduating school and whatever. It's certainly a tough time in America right now. And the question, you know, is where and how do we go from here? I've been mentioning to you, Joe Biden has been running some ads and trying to capitalize on the failure of Trump. And he does use that word. And you've heard me say that that's an important word. I've written an article or two about how that's important when you can tag your opponent with that word.
Well, an incompetent always fails. That's the measure of incompetency.
Well,
in Trump's case, it's not only incompetency, it's also an unwillingness to do the job.
Yeah. And that's what the second ad that I saw talks about. The first ad talks about Biden's background and his family and how they never gave up. And he said, you know, you've never given up on America. America should never give up on you and, you know, unite the country. The second ad that came out late in the week goes right at Trump for these failures. It calls him a deer in the headlights, calling not knowing what to do, that he froze, that he didn't do this or he didn't do that. And a president who fails to act or doesn't know how to act is no president at all. It's some pretty powerful wording in there. And I'm sure that they have a strategy to follow up on that as well.
Because what you have to notice is that Trump's failure to act is basically an attack on working people who are the main bearers of the brunt of the consequences of this infection that he has caused. I mean, it's working people who've lost their jobs. It's overwhelmingly minority working people who die and older white workers who die in nursing homes because of the federal government's refusal to produce the necessary protective equipment for the workers. So it's really a situation where this is an attack on working people. It's not just an attack on the country, but most specifically, it attacks working people.
Yeah, but let me backtrack a little bit, because the one thing that Trump is successful at is PR. He's a master of that, and what he was able to do 4 years ago, despite the fact that he had failed in so many things, he failed in the casino business. I mean, who fails in a casino business? You know, the house always wins in casino.
Yeah, the gambler
right?
fails.
The gambler always fails.
Well, he's a gambler. He's a gambler.
Yeah, he's a gambler, right. He failed at the university, failed in Trump Stakes, Trump Air, all these different things. But what he was able to do was turn these things around or turn, you know, or be able to BS things sufficiently that made him look like he was a success. And in fact, when in fact isn't. And so a lot of people, these people that have been hurt most by Trump's failures, don't forget, when the casinos went down, it was the little people that lost their jobs.
Right.
I hate to use that term, the little people, but the people who don't have, you know,
It wasn't the Sheldon Adelsons who lost out.
Right, right.
It was the guy working in the kitchen.
Right. And so, but he was able to convince them that it was in their interest to vote for him. And and the remarkable part about it is for 4 years, he's been able to hold that base. You listen on television, you look at the people that went to the rallies when there were still rallies, you read the letters to the editor in the paper, and these folks are still buying the PR. And for a variety of whatever reasons, he's been able to deflect their attention into other things, or he's been able to tap into something that's more important to them. Again, I always analogize to the people from the hills and the valleys in the South during the Civil War, who never owned a slave, who never were going to have enough money to ever own a slave, but they kept fighting for slavery because they had a different priority there. And that's what's keeping Trump going and his supporters going. And
but even so, he does not have a majority of the country behind him. This guy has always been a minority president, and he's a minority president today.
Right. He's never had a positive approval rating. From the get-go, the day after his inauguration, which was poorly attended, the Women's March was greatly attended, and it's gone on from there. But now we're down to the nitty-gritty, the last 6 months of a campaign, less than 6 months away, and we're having the polling that's out there. This week, some of the polls had the general poll, Biden up by 8, Biden up by 11, was the biggest spread. Even the Fox News poll, by the way, Trump took Fox to task for not doing enough to help reelect him, as if that was their job, you know.
That's not their job, but that is their mission.
That is their mission, of course. But, people say, well, then you got to look in the internals of the polls and the battleground states. And there was one poll that said in battleground states, Biden was losing. But most of the other polls have him winning substantially in many of the states. He's up in Michigan. He's up in Pennsylvania by 8. There's a couple of the new battleground states. He's up in Arizona. The people in Arizona apparently are in somewhat of a panic, the Republicans, with Martha McSally as their candidate, because
Gifford's husband
is up substantially there, and he could he could have the coattails. They've had Biden up in places like North Carolina and Florida. North Carolina, the Republicans have been somewhat in disarray. Florida has been a hard place for the Democrats for the last 20 years. It's been heartbreaking for them. They've always come up just short. This year they're up. They show Texas as being even, although no one is still near 50%. Georgia could be in play. All these other places.
Well, I don't know if the Democrats came up short in the Bush election, because after all, they stopped counting the votes.
Yeah, of course. And if anybody had figured out how to run the ballot in Palm Beach County, they wouldn't even have to worry about counting the votes.
Recounting
them. But, you know, so we have all of those dynamics happening in terms of the election right now. But the election is 6 months away. A lot of some of the political insiders say, well, the elections are really won or lost in the spring when you can define your opponent. And no matter what Trump is doing, he hasn't seemed to be able to define Joe Biden as something that people should avoid. Trump won because, in large part, while people didn't dislike Trump intensely, they also disliked Hillary. And when they got in the poll and they were deciding which one of these people did they dislike less, they decided to vote for Trump, and they split for Trump substantially. The polling now is where people dislike Biden, and far fewer people dislike Biden than dislike Hillary. He just happens to be a more likable candidate. He comes across better. those people are you know, the ones that dislike both are breaking for Biden substantially. So we have that
another
dynamic.
Another thing that's happening is it that the polls this week show that among in Trump's base, the Catholic voters who are older, 11 to 13% of them feel that his handling of the coronavirus crisis has been so bad that they no longer support him. And 7 to 8% of evangelical Protestants have the same attitude that they no longer support him because of his handling, his mishandling of this crisis. Now, if that is the case, if that's true, I don't see how we can possibly recover.
You know, I keep talking about the Biden ads. He's had two long ads. You talk about the Catholics. The first ad, he has a picture of his is taken in his boyhood home here in Scranton, and it shows his bed, his bedroom bed, and above the bed is a cross. There, not such a subtle background, but very meaningful to Catholics. Mm-hmm. They know what that means. Mm-hmm. The second thing is in the second ad, where Biden goes after Trump, and when he says that a president who fails to act is no president at all, or fails to protect you, is no president at all. That's got some power behind it. It takes away from the aura of the presidency and this image that Trump tries to project. The question is, will enough people see it, and will it mean anything right now? I think what it's doing is preventing Trump from getting his message across. It's kind of blunting Trump's messages and the image that he's trying to make on Joe Biden. So we'll have to see. I did see Biden this week on CNBC in the morning, and it was, he had a couple of little verbal slips, nothing serious. But one of the things that kind of impressed me was he was asked about Amazon, and they asked him, Senator or Mr. Vice President, do you think Amazon should be broken up? Which, of course, refers to Elizabeth Warren's position on that. And he didn't hesitate. He came right back and said, I think Amazon ought to pay its taxes. That's a strong point for him. And he said it with strength. And then he went on and he said, I think Amazon ought to pay a fair wage to its employees.
Well, that's the kind of thing he has to be talking about.
Exactly. He was right on message. He didn't take their bait about this. And he said, I'm going to raise corporate taxes. He said, he went down his list of things. He talked about the things he disagreed with Bernie Sanders on. He didn't come out for Medicaid for all. But Medicare for all, I'm sorry. He came out and said, I think that there should be a government option, and that if anybody who wants to take Medicare, they can get it. He said this crisis has shown that you can't rely on your health care being tied to your job. And they had nothing to come back with on that stuff.
What is there to come back with? If 40 right. million people have lost their job and they had their health care through their job, and everybody says the majority of them are not going to get those jobs back, what is there to say about health care? Then you have to have another way of getting health care.
You know, the irony of ironies, I mentioned Texas. There's a video out there where they're talking to Senator Cornyn from Texas, who's been opposed to Obamacare all the way along. And he's telling people who lost their jobs to sign up for for Obamacare, for the ACA. You can't make this stuff up. But
you could sign up for the ACA, but at the moment, if you don't have a job, you can't afford even the ACA premium.
Especially
in states where they didn't expand Medicaid and where they don't subsidize the premium, people who've lost their jobs are completely out of luck. So,
but people are,
you know, it's just demagogy on the part of Cornyn.
Yeah, well, it's a backtrack of his position, you know. And of course, in Texas, I don't know, is it going to matter? I don't know if he's going to run again for president, senator or not. But it's one of those things, and you still get this stuff. You still get this stuff. So it's out there.
But the point is that the Trump voter is not motivated by logic. He's and therefore logic doesn't convince him. He's motivated by racism, or he's motivated by hatred. And that is not an easy thing to convince a person to abandon.
Well, it's what Margaret Chase Smith talked about her party becoming, and she said this in 1950, 80, 70 years ago, fear, smear, ignorance, and bigotry. And those are the points that they've emphasized over the years. You know, it used to be subtle, the states' rights and things like that.
Well, that was the point of the so-called Southern strategy that Nixon pioneered.
Yeah. But we had this week in our area, we had some examples of this bigotry come out locally. I told you about. There was a front page article in the Scranton Times about a woman who had been on the Old Forge School Board for the better part of 20 years, had actually been its president one term. And she got into some sort of a squabble at the school board meeting and decided to resign from the school board. And following her resignation, the microphone was still on and they had it kept recording. And Old Forge refused to turn over the transcript of what was said. But eventually they were able to figure out someone heard the recording, and she came out with a anti-Semitic remark about Bernie Sanders and the ovens.
She say exactly?
She said something about she referred to Bernie Sanders as a Jewish bastard who missed the ovens, or who the ovens missed. But she also
I don't think that his parents were unmarried, but he definitely missed the ovens.
He missed the ovens. Yeah. But, you know, this is from...
And she was on the school board for how many years? 30 years?
Better part of 20 years.
Responsible for the education of those kids.
Yeah, those kids who you're trying to
teach. What kind of democratic, humanistic education could she have been proposing when she herself was an inhuman beast?
Well, she's not one to fine-tune the curriculum, but this is about leadership by example and what people who shouldn't be in leadership. And this is endemic of the kind of people that run local school boards, unfortunately. We've talked about this before about, the Republicans always talk about local control. The Old Forge School Board has had some other characters. They've had Frank Scavo down there, who runs for every office, and he's a Trumper and things like that. By the way, this woman, who I will not dignify by giving her name out, also took a shot at someone she called Pocahontas. So you know where she's taking her cues from. I've been led to believe by some of my sources who haven't seen the transcript but have heard reports about it from people that there's also some possible other racial epithets that are in there as well.
From her. Well, and it couldn't be that she just erupted suddenly. I mean, she was there 20 years. This is a woman who spoke like this all her life.
Yeah. These are her views. But what we've had is that it's now become permissible, you know, the tiki marches in Charlottesville to put your ideas and your odious ideas out there, and without shame in some parts. Although she did resign, but I think she resigned more in pique than in shame over this thing. We're seeing this over and over and over again. People being proud of it. Last week.
Contribution to American politics is the legitimization of open Nazi talk. That's what it amounts to.
Well, in Michigan this week, he went up and he praised Henry Ford for his bloodlines.
Ford, the promoter of the Protocols of Zion.
Yeah. The Dearborn Independent, didn't he accept an award from Hitler or something?
He certainly did. Yes, he certainly did.
But speaking of that, as I started to say, last week my son and I were on Linden Street in Scranton. We drove by a pickup truck. It had Florida license plates, but it was all festooned with the Trumpist manifestations and had flags standing in the back of, in the bed of the truck, one with an AK-47 on it, and it had Trump, the Magnificent 45 placard on the back, supporting him for another term. And then on the other side, they attacked Governor Wolf, who they called Führer Wolf. They had a big placard. It was bigger than a bumper sticker. And on there, they used German language. They had two swastikas and two sets of SS lightning bolts on it.
And this guy was parading around with a Florida tag.
Yeah, driving around downtown Scranton with this stuff. Yeah. Again, this, you know, where's the leadership on this and what's being said?
Well, that's the whole point. You can't save the country from the coronavirus. You're a collaborator with the coronavirus. At the same time, you're a collaborator with the Nazis.
Yeah. Yeah, and this is important. This ties into a couple of things because, you know, we're seeing voter suppression. The way that we have to get out of this, or one way, is to win elections. And this one, we need to win this one decisively to not only win the presidency, but to also win the Senate, to stop what Mitch McConnell has been doing there. And we're seeing attempts, Trump's attempts to suppress the vote with, you know, mail-in ballots type of thing. This week I was on a conference call with Pennsylvania, which has Governor Wolf was able to come to a compromise with the Republicans in the legislature. He was criticized for some of the things in the bill, but he's expanded now mail-in voting with no, you don't need an excuse to vote. Before, you had to either be sick or out of the country.
I understand Lackawanna County is swamped with mail-in ballots.
They are swamped with mail-in ballots. And the Secretary of the Commonwealth was saying on this call that she hopes to be able to send out an application to every registered voter in Pennsylvania to mail in a ballot. And she hopes that when they return those, that when she sends out the ballots, that it is with postage prepaid, so people don't have to put a stamp on it. Other states do that. There's four states that have virtually all mail-in voting. They're all out west. But they're, you know, and it doesn't favor one party or the other. Utah, it's the Republicans, and Democrats win in Oregon, things like that. And by the way, there was an election a week and a half ago in California for the seat that Katie Hill gave up, and it was done mostly by absentee ballot, write-in ballot, and the Republican won. Whether that was an aberration or not, or whether the Democrats weren't really organized, we'd have to see. But so it cuts both ways. But we need to get people voting, and you need to get control of the courts as well. We had an exhibit of that this week over the Michael Flynn case, where, as you know, Bill Barr has been trying to do everything to help exonerate Michael Flynn and to undercut the Mueller probe of the Russian interference. And he wants to withdraw the charges, and the judge wants to investigate further as to why these charges should be withdrawn, particularly since Michael Flynn pled guilty. And in the middle of this, Michael Flynn's lawyer decided to try to take the case away from the judge by appealing to the D.C. Circuit Court. And surprising to all legal scholars, the D.C. Circuit decided to get involved in it before there was any decision by the judge and ordered the judge
appellate court decided to hear an appeal on a case that was not yet settled? What is there
That's
to
correct.
Appeal? What is there to appeal?
Well, the question was whether or not the judge has any discretion and whether to order him not to use any discretion, but just to follow the recommendation of the attorney general. What I guess they're saying is the case is over. If they're not going to prosecute, there is no case. But the judge has also reserved the right to hold Michael Flynn in contempt for lying to him then about his guilty plea. And this is not over by a long shot, but these are two of the judges who on a three-judge panel went along with this, where one was a Bush appointee and one was a Trump appointee, Judge Rao. So you can see what happened. And that's been the big push by Trump, for his evangelical base, for his Catholic base, that he was going to appoint judges that were going to uphold his position and the so-called pro-life position, the anti-abortion position on that. And, you know, we had a movement. We had an interesting thing come out about that.
Well, you remember that in the last 8 months of Obama's term, a Supreme Court vacancy came up, and Mitch McConnell said, we don't consider Supreme Court vacancies in the last year of a president's term because there's a presidential primary election coming up. Let the people decide. Well, Lindsey Graham this week said he didn't see any reason not to appoint a new Supreme Court judge or more if it turns out that one of the Supreme Court judges dies.
I think if a Supreme Court judge dies in October, they're going to push somebody through.
Exactly.
You know, people have to understand there are four justices on the Supreme Court. Four of them, Roberts, Alito, Kavanaugh, and Gorsuch, who were appointed by presidents who lost the popular vote.
Right.
So the will of the people is not being done on the Supreme Court, but they're going to do everything they can to keep that keep it there.
Right.
Keep it there. And they've been out after this ever since the Roe v. Wade, well, actually since Brown versus Board of Education.
Since the Warren Supreme Court, which they thought was a disaster because it produced civil rights.
But it was interesting when you talk about their methodology. There is a new documentary out this week, a film, that talks to a lady named Norma McCorvey, who is better known as Jane Roe from Roe versus Wade. And as you know, what happened is that was the case where they recognized the right of privacy and a woman's right to have an abortion. It was a 7-2 decision, by the way. It wasn't that close. And then she came in the 1990s, 20-some years later, and she renounced her position very publicly, was baptized as born again, and was marched around the country and paraded that she had made a great error and that she really was, that she always regretted this and aborting her child and what have you. And in this documentary, they talked to her a few months before she died, a couple of years ago. And what she said was, I did it for the money. I had this conversion for the money. I was paid by a couple of pastors to say this and to go around the country. I think she said she was paid over $400,000 to maintain this facade. And she said they used me and I used them.
And the preachers admitted it. The preachers didn't deny it.
Right. They were they're proud of this.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the end justifies the means for these folks.
Right.
And that's what we're dealing with in, you know, in the election, that they that the Trump people feel that any end, any means is OK as long as they get what they want in the end.
And what they want is profoundly bad for the average American.
It's profoundly bad for America in general because it's antithetical to democracy and a republican form of government.
Yep. Well, there you have it. Memorial Day, morning in America.
Yeah, I mean, what people fought for all of these years, to preserve the union rather than disunion, to preserve our way of life against totalitarians and Nazis and things like that, and honoring these dead. And or whether we're dishonoring them through what the Trump forces would see happen to our country. Yeah. And unfortunately, too many of elected officials are willing to go along with this.
All right. That's it for this week.
Yeah.
Let's hope we have a more optimistic thing to talk about next week.
Yes.
See you next week. You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place. This program is supported by Argosy Bookshop of New York City, 116 East 59th Street, just down the block from Bloomingdale's. Old and rare books, prints and maps, members of the International League of Antiquarian Booksellers, founding members of the Antiquarian Booksellers Association of America, members of the Appraisers Association of America, on the web at Argosy Books, ArgosyBooks.com. Check them out for books, autographs, maps, and prints.